From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 1999 in a local city. See if this sounds familiar. High school graduation rates not high enough. The population had been declining in previous decades after major employers closed. Downtown storefronts were often empty. Perhaps that sounds like Rochester, maybe Buffalo, but we're talking this hour about Geneva, New York, on the north end of Seneca Lake. In 1999, the graduation rate in Geneva was 60%. Today, it's 84.5%. And among those empty storefronts, as recently as 2008, 60% were vacant. Today, that number is down to about 20%. But how? How is this revitalization happening? Just days ago, Geneva was one of 10 American cities chosen for the All-America Cities designation. Now I know, maybe that drives you a little nuts. Maybe you've driven to Buffalo, seen the sign that says, "Welcome to Buffalo, an All-America City," and you've wanted to staple an N onto that sign. I have done that. Well, I haven't actually done it. I've wanted to do that. But All-America is the correct term here. It's an actual award, and we're going to find out what it means in a moment as we focus on how our towns, our areas can rebuild and revitalize. My guests for the hour include Matt Horn, Geneva City Manager. Nice to have you, Matt.
Nice to be here.
Sage Gerling's here. Sage is Geneva's Director of Neighborhood Initiatives. Nice to have you, Sage.
Likewise.
And Katie Flowers is Hobart and William Smith College's Director of Community Engagement and Service Learning.
Thank you for having us.
Is that the correct title?
That's the correct
one. I really practiced in the break. That's a great.
That's why the students say CECL.
CECL, very good. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you. We're talking about your town and the revitalization that's happened there. And I want to start, Matt, with that designation, an All-America city, 10 cities a year. And how did Geneva get on that list?
Well, it's an historic award. It goes back about six. This actually was our 66th year. The National Civic League gives this designation. And every year, they have a call for nominations. And their program is really based in civic engagement. The idea that the answers don't always come from the top, and rarely do the best answers come from the top. We want to work at a grassroots level. And, you know, I've been following this award for a number of years, and I've worked in a lot of different places around the country, and I've always wanted to apply, but I've never had the right storyline, because in most communities I've worked in, we just didn't have the civic engagement piece down. And Geneva really is a special place. It's a place where we rely heavily on the what we call talent capitalization, on the energy and the enthusiasm of our residents. And so over the past 7 or 8 years, we've built programs that were based in resident engagement. And it just so happened that this year, when the National Civic League announced their call for nominations, Geneva had a couple of great programs that really fit with what the National Civic League was looking for. And among those in Geneva are our collective impact work at the school district, our community focus on getting kids across the stage for graduation and on to college and career readiness, our neighborhood program, which is now in its sixth year, focused heavily on getting residents involved in every aspect of community development. And then our downtown revitalization, which you noted has been pretty stunning over the last couple of years. And it's become less and less about grants and city programs and more about these businesses caring about each other and caring about the success of Geneva. And so we kind of got together as a group and said, hey, let's give it a shot. And we put these stories to paper. It's about a 40-page application. We submitted the application. We think they won't ever give you the exact number, but we think it was on the order of 150 communities nationwide who applied for the designation. We were one of 16 nominees. We had to head out to Denver and give a personal pitch to a jury, which is a group of folks from the philanthropic world, from city government, and from education, who heard our story, heard our pitch, and it really rang true with them. And ultimately, we were one of 10 designees.
And there you are. Well, congratulations to that. What you might not know is that in 1949, in the first year they did this, the first sign they had, they ran out of letters, so they didn't have an N. So they just said, let's just stick with All-America Cities.
Right.
Now you know the real story for the Civic League behind the All-America Cities. So when you see it on the way to Buffalo, are you commemorating that in any way in Geneva now?
We are preparing to. We've actually talked about how we roll it into our brand. It's still pretty new to us, so we're trying to get our head around exactly how to celebrate it. But yes, it'll be a big point of pride for us. It is today.
And the reason I wanted you to walk us through that, Matt, is just to kind of outline for our listeners, there are some awards that are sort of everybody gets a trophy, right, kind of a thing. And this is not one of them.
No, not at all. It was one of the most intense competitions that I've ever been a part of. And I think we really did. Our presentation really rang as authentic with the judges. Katie and I were both on the presentation panel. We can tell this story with a lot of heart and soul because we live it every day, and we're excited about the progress that Geneva's made.
We're talking about Geneva this hour and the efforts at revitalizing Geneva and what perhaps lessons can be drawn for all of us. And certainly our panelists aren't here to lecture anybody else, but I think we can learn from some of the success they've had. And my family knows the Geneva well. My son and I, who's three, we were at the Kidventure Dome on Sunday. So we were there. And he often allows me to stop for coffee on the way through if we're driving down to Penn Yannacy relatives. So we know Geneva well, but I don't know it as certainly well on the educational side, the neighborhood side. And I want to talk a little bit about the educational side. As Matt mentioned, part of your presentation was talking about the success in raising graduation rates, for example. You've gone from 60% 15, 16 years ago to 84.5% now. And that is a pretty remarkable change, along with confronting, every community has its own challenges, every community deals with poverty, but Geneva has some significant challenges there. So let me go around the table and ask our panelists how, and you can answer in various ways, I know you have different specialties, but I'll start with Matt. How has that changed? Why has the graduation rate gone up so sharply in 15, 16 years?
Well, it's certainly, I mean, something that we celebrate today as kind of a major jump, and we always like to say we don't want to painted as an overnight success. It was 15 years, but it was 15 years of really hard work and a number of principals and superintendents and school board members who've contributed to that over the last 15 years. I think when we really started gaining steam was when we turned a community focus toward it. President Mark Geeran from Hobart William Smith Colleges had attended an engagement on this concept of collective impact. And collective impact is this theory that it's not one person or one agency's job to address these kind of sweeping civic challenges. It takes a community. And what we did was sit down and develop a shared measurement system, some shared goals, some shared nomenclature around what our challenges were. And when we said, you know, we want to move the needle on graduation rates. We want to get kids ready for college or their careers, and we want to enhance literacy. Right away, you start to put a good to-do list together. And I know Katie's been at the heart of this in terms of what that to-do list looks like.
Sure. Yeah, the backstory was that President Geeran attended the White House Council for Community Solutions, where they featured Strive's efforts in Cincinnati, Ohio. And we had been trending upward, thankfully, for the past 15, 20 years. But that didn't mean that we weren't keenly aware that there was much work to be done specifically on some of these targeted subgroups about getting everyone across the stage. And so a small group got together around he and Mrs. Geeran's dining room table, and we started brainstorming, what can we do as a community? And so that's how we evolved. If Cincinnati can do this, Geneva can do this, and that's why we've been plugging forward ever since.
There is a big difference, though, between 60 and 85%.
Mm-hmm.
And the city of Rochester would probably give anything right now just to be at 60.
Mm-hmm.
85% feels almost out of reach at this point, and that's almost double what the city of Rochester's graduation rate is. And again, that there's a bit of apples and oranges. The population of Geneva is much smaller, but there are similarities. You know, let's paint a little community picture if we could. You go back 50, 60 years. What were the big employers in Geneva?
Yeah, we had major industry, a lot of production in Geneva. We also had two major military installations, mm-hmm, that the community served as a service point for. We were the only city in the region. And so, you know, 1940s and 50s, we were in the 25, 30,000 population. We're about half that now.
So okay, and so you've lost your biggest employers. Who are the biggest employers in Geneva now?
Today, we've got a couple of great manufacturing employers that are larger in Guardian Glass and Zotos. And then from there, it falls off pretty sharply in terms of manufacturing. It goes down to 10 and 12 person operations. And so what we've gone from is this model of, you know, chasing smokestacks to kind of building a breadbasket full of small 5 to 10 employee operations. Because really the larger ticket employers after the manufacturers are folks like Hobart and William Smith or Finger Lakes Health or or the city and county.
So, and that is, again, that is smaller scale, but that parallels Rochester in many, many ways. You've gone from the big three manufacturers to, you know, we often hear from the RBAs and the other, you know, sort of business leaders around town that don't give up on manufacturing, but don't expect it to look like 60,000 employees anymore, that it's smaller. Certainly tech, et cetera, is big in Rochester, but you also have the University of Rochester, Hobart and William Smith in Geneva. You have the medical center, the same kind of situation there. So you have these parallels. And Zotos, by the way, he mentioned Zotos. Our listeners may not realize it, but you may have a Zotos product in your shower,
Absolutely.
A shampoo of some kind made there. And so how have you been able to try to shore up some of those losses and at least stabilize where, you know, it's easier, I think, if you can get a big, big manufacturer, a big employer, harder to fill it with 5 to 10 to 15 to 20 employee companies. How have you been able to do it?
Yeah, the biggest trick is cooperation. So if we can get all the ships pointed in the same direction and moving with a shared vision, that's step one. And we've had, from an economic development standpoint, great partners. The county IDA and Ontario County in general. When Guardian Glass, for example, landed in Geneva, it was the largest economic development project in New York State in the previous 20 years. So this manufacturing fall off has been a fall off over the last, 20 or 30 years. And we had to basically change the way we do business from a bureaucratic, check the box standpoint to how do we make these projects happen? How do we get downtown storefronts full again? How do we take abandoned industrial infrastructure and chop it up into smaller spaces that are affordable? And we have two great spaces just like that in the Geneva Entrepreneurial Development Center, which is the former American Can manufacturing plant in Geneva. At one point, 1,200 employees on site at the American Can. In 1998, it was an abandoned building that was getting ready to fall in on itself. And the Geneva IDA stepped in and worked with Ontario County and the state of New York to break that up into some smaller pieces and invite these 5 or 10 person manufacturing firms or other firms, service and distribution firms, in. It's also about getting more specialized and thinking more about your strengths from a niche perspective. And that's where the tech farm comes in. We've got great strengths in agriculture, and you're seeing this resurgence or this surge in craft food and beverage. So you think about firms like Cherry Bundy, who's the sports drink manufacturer in Geneva, and Stony Brook Whole Foods and others who have really captured the spirit of this fine craft food and beverage. And we saw that coming from the standpoint of we're in the largest, most productive agricultural economy in New York State, in Ontario County. We've got the experiment station right there who's working on things like wine and grapes and apples and other things. And having the research there, having the land there that's available and a welcoming city and county government, and just putting those pieces in place so that when a small firm, when intellectual capital spins out of Cornell, they can say, why should I get up and go to New York City? Geneva's right here. They've got the space for me. They want me here. I'm right across the creek from my professor who taught me about food packaging or whatever else. And it starts to make a lot of sense. And so that's the other piece, is narrowing your focus to the thing that you're going to be best at.
You're hearing from Matt Horn, Geneva City Manager. Also here are Katie Flowers from Hobart and William Smith Colleges. She's the Director of Community Engagement and Service Learning. And Sage Gerling, Geneva's Director of Neighborhood Initiatives. And we're going to be talking about the neighborhoods, the housing market coming up here. But now we're working our way back to the schools, because now we're getting a picture of what's been going on over the decades in Geneva, a city that, if you're just joining us, was recently designated by the National Civic League an All-America City, one of 10 chosen on an annual basis out of dozens, and certainly a high distinction. The only one in New York State, I think, this year.
Correct.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about how they've been able to have some success. And you're seeing this picture of a city that looked in some ways like a smaller version of Rochester 50 years ago, with the same kind of challenges and evolution, and now they're rebuilding. The graduation rate goes from 60% 16 years ago to just about 85% now. What is poverty like? How do you sort of paint the picture of every community deals with poverty at some level? How is Geneva doing in terms of dealing with poverty, and how much does that tie into graduation rates, quality of education, et cetera?
Well, I think we have this opportunity in Geneva where we talk about actionable scale, and we are uniquely urban. We mirror larger communities, as you mentioned, but we have a much smaller number. So we wrap around and we realize 3 to 5 students that we have some targeted interventions that we can work very collaboratively, cross-sector Boys and Girls Club, the faith communities, the business communities in terms of internships, and we realize 3 to 4 students is an additional percentage point. So all of a sudden, this insurmountable challenge of grappling poverty and how that is inextricably linked with graduation rate, we realize we can do this if we collaborate and reach across the table. So Matt's right. It's not an overnight success. On shoulders we stand. Success for Geneva's Children has been collecting data for 15, 20 years. So we've been able to hone in on what that data looks like so we can build interventions to support kids to get across the stage.
And if you missed it earlier, they mentioned that just sitting at Mark Guerin's dining room table,
right,
talking about what to do. But some of those big bullet points on Mark Guerin's and your list and Matt's list and Geneva City list, some of those wish list items were the kind of items you'd see on any urban setting.
Mm-hmm.
Better academic scores, and you want more kids graduating, and you want more people employed. Well, everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So what's an example? What is one thing that Geneva has done or that the community has done to reach out and start to turn 3 or 4 students at a time from not going to graduate to now we're graduating?
Absolutely. Well, with this collective impact model, you put it out there as a sort of call to action. So the colleges, Hobart and William Smith, agreed to essentially serve as a backbone founding organization. But we also, we're not in the healthcare industry. We're not literacy experts. We are a college. So we looked at the data, and the data said, if you intervene at these key times in a young person's life and you help them realize that college is possible, that is the time to do it. So we bring every second 6th and 9th grader to campus annually. So 500 students that are going through FAFSA workshops to learn about financial aid, that are learning about the importance of job shadowing, that are hearing from college kids who have this cool factor that maybe some of us adults are lacking, that college students are saying, I struggled with that. This is how I overcame it. And this is what I'm doing now. And the young people want to emulate that. And so they aspire to that ideal. So that's one example that the colleges are doing, but that's mirrored, as I think Matt's indicated in previous examples of, a banker at the Finger Lakes looking at this wish list saying, wow, I'd like to, be a party at the table. What could I do? Well, the 4-H club needs some aprons so that the kids can act like real scientists. I would like to host job shadowing opportunities. So I'm a local radio host and I would like to, weigh in right there. So all of a sudden, you see a student who is working harder in school because they realize, this community is invested in me, which maybe is not something that is able to be articulated by a 12, 14, 16-year-old, but it's certainly present, and it's working its way through classroom success.
When it comes to neighborhood efforts, Sage, I want to ask you, I think of Rochester. I think of our own superintendent literally going door to door, knocking on doors of homes where students just live in that house and didn't show up at school for the day, and trying to get the neighborhood to buy in, to say, hey, don't make the superintendent go door to door every day. Help me out. Look out for each other, et cetera. It's a smaller scale. How is it like in Geneva when it comes to when you've got truancy issues, or how can you get neighborhoods buying in?
Yep. So an example on a couple different levels. One is a project that's happening this summer. So I saw in your lobby you have the free little library box, and people can come and take books. So our neighborhood associations have been populating some of our parks with these boxes, and they're collaborating with Geneva Reads, which is a program, a literacy program for our community, to do kind of reading afternoons and getting kids to come read with neighbors. And on that level, it's a smaller level. It's a one event that happens, but it starts to signal to kids that the neighbors care, that they're interested in kids in their neighborhood reading. We also do a lot of outreach in parks. So we've been this summer teaming in one of our kind of hardest hit park with the Boys and Girls Club and Ontario County Youth Bureau to play games and just hang out. So we have, police officers coming to play basketball with our kids. And that's, you wouldn't say that's directly tied to school, but what it's starting to send a message is that kid and each kid that's there is important to our city. And so that starts to drill down and get them to better understand that their future and their importance in our community is something that we take seriously.
So I don't want to oversimplify what our panelists are telling us about. And right now we're just looking at the high school graduation rate going from 60% to about 85% in a span of about 16 years and how you do that. I don't want to oversimplify, but it looks like part of the recipe is, number one, you've got to have an economy that can provide some jobs, and you want to have a decently vibrant local economy. You want to have storefronts filled if you can. You know, 2008, Geneva had 60% of storefronts vacant. Now it's 20, and that's a remarkable change. So you've got that, and more people working generally means better economic prosperity, probably means less poverty, good start. Then you've got some almost individualized outreach. You know, it's a smaller scale, but you're able to, 4-H does this, mm-hmm. This part of the community does this, this part of the faith community does this, and you're reaching out to three or four students at a time and pulling them along and getting them back into the swing of things and getting graduated. Can that model travel? Do you believe that, and again, you're not here to tell the world how to do its business, but does it work because it's a relatively small community, or can that model travel?
I think it does travel, and I think Rock the Future is a local example of that, networked through SUNY Chancellor Nancy Zimpfer's Cradle to Career initiative. She was in Cincinnati when it started. She brought it to New York State, and we at Geneva has been very fortunate to benefit from their resources, because it's we're probably oversimplifying it. It's a lot more complicated. It's drilling down into actionable data. Where does that actionable data exist? Well, it exists in 12 different places by 14 different stakeholders. So getting those people to work across the table and find a common denominator, and then a strategic plan from there. Cradle to Career is a wonderful resource. I'd encourage many communities to look into that. It's on the web. Rock the Future and Geneva 2020 are local, you know, examples of those who are utilizing those resources. But it can and does travel. Strive is part of a national network, so many communities are benefiting in this way.
Yeah, it's funny. They look to us and wondered, could it travel this way? Because they had tackled it in Cincinnati with these mm-hmm. mega partners, you know, Procter & Gamble mm-hmm. and these other just serious institutional partners that a smaller community might, like Geneva, might not have. And so when we took it on, one of the first questions we asked was, well, that's Cincinnati. They've got, look at all the people they right. had around the table. Could we even?
Interesting, because here I am assuming, well, easier for Geneva. You right. guys are smaller, you know, but a little bit more of a laboratory.
Right.
But you're saying, hey, other cities have done it that are larger because they have those mm-hmm. larger advantages mm-hmm. sometimes. Very interesting.
Yeah, and what it came down to was, thankfully in Geneva, we can more quickly bring people to the table. So we were doing the work, as Katie pointed out, you know, 10, 15 organizations already with their sleeves rolled up and in it and digging through the problem. All it really took to get the horsepower really moving was getting those folks around the table. And in Cincinnati, you don't have the same situation as Geneva, where we're going to see each other at Wegmans Produce, whether we want to or not. You know, we're going to be bumping into these organizations on an everyday basis. And that's what was happening. And, you know, whenever Mark would see another partner he wanted to bring in, he'd grab him in the mm-hmm. in the cereal aisle at Wegmans and say, you know, come down to my dining room table and let's start talking about this. And that's how we started to pull the horses together.
Mm-hmm. Our guests are talking about some of the success of the revitalization of Geneva on the north end of Seneca Lake. They were just designated by the National Civic League as an All-America city, just like Buffalo was years ago, which is why it's on that sign in Buffalo that makes English teachers crash their car twice a year driving back and forth from it. It's an All-America city. It's a really nice designation, and you're finding out why this hour from our guests, Matt Horn, Geneva City Manager, Sage Gerling, Geneva Director of Neighborhood Initiatives, and Katie Flowers, who is Hobart and William Smith College's Director of Community Engagement and Service Learning. We're going to get a short break, and we're going to come back and talk about some of the other successful sectors in Geneva. We're going to talk about dining, the housing market there, and what's changing there. And I'm going to ask them if they're ever going to stop allowing automobile traffic on my favorite street in the Finger Lakes. We've talked about it in this program before, but there's a really, really special spot in Geneva.
Can't wait.
And I'm going to try to get a commitment from them right after this
dear.
Break here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, there's a new campaign aimed at making solar-powered energy more affordable for local homeowners. How does it work? How much does solar really cost, and what could it save you? We'll talk to the experts on that. Then, second hour, discovering the fountain of youth. We talk about the science of aging, all of that Wednesday on Connections.
In the mid-60s, Jonathan Kozel was fired for teaching a Langston Hughes poem at an inner-city elementary school.
Curriculum deviation, that I was unsuited for the highly responsible profession of a teacher.
He's spent a lifetime writing about underprivileged students since. His story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, talking about Geneva this hour, and it's a lot of fun to talk to people who are really proud of where they live. Katie Flowers and I from Hobart and William Smith were just talking during the break about how nice it is. You feel it the more you walk around, the more you talk to people, you feel a lot more pride in Geneva.
Absolutely. People are just so proud of this little jewel of a community that it's uniquely urban, and people are proud to live there. I am.
Well, And I want to make clear to our listeners, you know, every town in this area would probably love to come on the show and talk about what's going well for them. And hey, it's good PR. We're not fooling ourselves about that. But there are some real reasons that Geneva and Geneva residents do feel that way, not just the least of which is this National Civic League designation of an All-America City, one of 10, and the only one in New York State this year. But, you know, we've been talking about the graduation rate. It's up almost 25% in the last 15 years. We've been talking about storefronts, 60% vacant in 2008, only 20% vacant now. I mean, there's a lot of life. There's a lot of vibrancy going on. There's a lot of life on Linden Street, and I asked if they're going to get a commitment here. One of my favorite places in the entire region is this little street called Linden Street. Sage, you want to explain to our listeners why I love it so much? What's on Linden Street?
Linden Street is a little piece of Europe found in Geneva.
It really is.
So it's a pedestrian scale street. So when you're on it, you feel like you've stepped into somebody's public backyard. You are someone special and welcomed just being on the street. There are little lights overhanging, and it just has some great character. And we have some great businesses that are coming. We have microclimates there right now with the wine bar and the Flounge, which has great gifts. But we're getting Finger Lakes Table is coming, and that'll be only 12 seats. You get to sit with people you don't know to eat dinner.
It's a restaurant. Is Christopher Bates, is that right?
Yeah, yes.
So Christopher Bates, just as a background for our listeners, he and his wife Isabel own the Wienery, the Finger Lakes Wienery, which is a must visit. It is gourmet with no pretension, burgers and dogs and local. There's a burger called The Local that has goat cheese and all kinds of great stuff slathered onto. So it's a fabulous place, and that's down a lot closer to Watkins Glen. And the Finger Lakes Table is their new restaurant. Dozen seats. It's going to open when?
Sometime in the month
the
or two.
Yep.
Is it that soon?
It's soon.
Oh, see, that's an excuse for me to get Christopher on the program.
There's a yummy bakery there as well, an upscale cocktail lounge that's coming. And then during the daytime, it also has businesses, insurance. Our post office is located there too. Super Casuals is just around the corner. So it kind of has a vibrancy during the day, but it has this growing kind of evening.
You get the Smith crowd walking over there.
Yeah.
So it's a great spot for pedestrian traffic. We've talked about walkability on this program in Rochester. Have you thought about shutting down automobile traffic on this little street?
Yeah, well, we've had some great conversations about it. We got a proposal. Actually, it probably started well before this, but we started really formalizing conversations about 3 years ago when a William Smith student put together an urban design project that showcased how Linden really could be a pedestrian thoroughfare and be segmented off as for pedestrians only. And she addressed it challenges with the post offices and other things. And so we've taken a couple of years and digested that. Change sometimes moves a little slowly. And we've gone through a couple of different iterations. We've looked at parklets, which are these small opportunities to return public space to active use and not dedicate it to cars. But when it came to Linden, it just kept coming back up. You know, this makes sense, particularly in the evenings when we've got lots, a good concentration of dining and entertainment options right there. People said, you know, why not give it a shot? So City Council charged us, Sage and I, with sitting down with some stakeholders, the property owners on Linden and the the store owners, and then we brought in some other folks from around downtown in the community, and just asked, what are the positives here? What do you see as potential challenges? And so what we're pitching to City Council actually tomorrow night is this concept of closing it for Friday evenings, Saturday evenings, and Sunday evenings in the summertime with some predictability and regularity, so that if you're on the wine trail or you're coming back from the Wienery and looking for dessert, you can stop on Linden Street, grab a glass of wine and a pastry, and just sit and enjoy the open air, some musical opportunities that will be showcased there. And we just think it's a neat opportunity. As folks said, in a downtown, in an urban setting, there's not a lot of opportunity to engage with the outdoors. It's a built environment. There's very little green space. Geneva really needs a civic center, and we've got a real opportunity here.
So that's just one small section of streets. But let's broaden the view now to talk a little bit about where housing goes next, because for a community that is sort of stabilized population, that has a lot of things going well, you want to feel welcome for those who are, maybe young couples, young families. You want to feel that it is not, that it's egalitarian enough that it works for a lot of different levels. And Sage, take me through that. What's going on now with when it comes to housing?
Well, a couple things. One is we now have 11 neighborhoods, which we didn't have before. And you might say, we're a small town, why would we need to segregate into different neighborhoods? And the exciting thing about it is that we have different housing stock. We have different architectural character that really pulls out and teases out what these neighborhoods are like. And we have people with different interests. So Founders Square is really into Washington Street Cemetery. So it used to be just a cemetery that was, maintained by the city, but people didn't go into it anymore. And they've really taken it on, restored cemetery markers, put in plantings, put in a bench, made it more of a place. And they have concerts there, and they do musical porches once a year, where you have music on different porches and you go around the neighborhood. But a different neighborhood, East Lakeview, is a kind of rural in character. If you're going down the streets, you almost wonder if you're in the city anymore. It's kind of a really neat gem of the city. We have some of our oldest housing stock there. And Golvin Park is something that's really important to that neighborhood association, really bringing activities back to the youth there and using that park as kind of a venue. So we have other neighborhoods that are really interested in the housing stock itself and doing curb appeal projects. So Hildreth Hill is actually not taking over, but working on a zombie property. So a zombie property is one that's been in the foreclosure process, but it's kind of stuck in limbo. And so the care outside of the property looks like nobody really is investing in it. So they're actually going with permission from the bank and working with the city to clean it up so that it looks back to kind of the standards that the residents feel needs to be for their neighborhood. So each of the neighborhoods kind of gets to explore their own personality, which is really fun, because one of our initiatives is really having people live and work and play in the city. So we don't, we've lost employers, but some of those employers, the employees maybe didn't live in Geneva. So what we're really trying to do is make sure if you work in Geneva, you're living here, you're playing here. And that means we have to offer a variety of housing stock and a variety of kind of character for people to kind of choose, how they want to be involved in their neighborhoods. But we do have a housing stock issue. We kind of, the middle market, we don't have a lot of homes that necessarily meet the family of today. So we have these great old buildings that need work, that maybe only have one bathroom, and that doesn't necessarily fit our
families. How do you fix that? What do you do?
So we're looking at whether we can actually support a little bit of infill, but mostly we're trying to incentivize or encourage people to make improvements to their homes, to feel like they can make an investment and they'll see that return on investment. But it's slow in coming, and we have to continuously kind of work on carrots. So, for example, our local development corporation has a Live Where You Work incentive program, where it gives some funds to closing costs to purchase a home within the city. And so the goal there is that they'll have a little incentive and feel like they can give back and improve their home and stay in Geneva.
And so the way you, the term you used was the middle, what was the term you used?
Kind of our middle market.
The middle market. So yes. That's where you're lacking right now.
Yes.
And so these are some incentives to try to address that. And that leads to what is always an interesting question for me to ask members of government. Matt Horn, Geneva City Manager, is here. in our community here in Monroe County and Rochester, it's been a bit of a sensitive question on what kind of tax incentives do you give for businesses, for companies? What's the right offer that is fair without giving away the store? You know, you don't want to attract a bunch of companies and have them pay no taxes, but you want them to be there. You want to be competitive. How do you find that balance? How often are you asking that question, that what's the right sort of outlay here that we can afford that is right, that makes us competitive without giving away the store?
A lot. We're asking ourselves that question a lot. I've worked primarily in the Southeast before I got here, in these high growth communities that didn't have these questions, who weren't having to offer the tax incentives and other things that we have to do in New York State. And there was an old saying down there, the been here's ain't going to pay for the come here's, right? And so that was their take on economic development. And, you know, I think we're a lot more realistic. And in how we've been able to keep our residents and politicians and others okay with what we're doing with the incentive packages we put together is we make it a lot more fine-tuned. You can't just walk in and apply for a payment in lieu of tax agreement and be guaranteed it because, well, we need the jobs or we need the money. We look at it more strategically to say, you know, what problem are we trying to solve here? We are, thankfully, in Geneva, haven't in the last couple of years had a real jobs problem. So somebody who's going to come in and promise to create 1,000 jobs that doesn't meet our environmental tests, that doesn't meet our sustainability tests, that doesn't meet our community standard tests, is in all likelihood, we would say thanks, but you know we need to figure something else out. Whereas on the other hand, you know, these smaller projects that do more closely align with our strategy are going to get a lot more attention, and we're going to focus a lot more on those. And you do have to be able to go back to the residents each time and say, listen, I know it feels like we're giving away a lot here, but here's what we're actually giving away, and here's on the balanced scorecard, here's what we expect to gain from that. We expect to gain, you know, 10, 15, 25 new healthy households. We expect to see our school district improve because of that, our home values improve because of that, and that's the approach we've taken. But, you know, this wholesale, you know, 50 years ago, kind of chasing smokestacks concept where, like you said early in the segment, we're going to land a 2,500-person plant is not only not realistic, but you probably, in all fairness, you know, couldn't afford to give away enough of the store to make a project like that viable.
When it comes to then the biggest needs to fill, Sage just identified middle housing. And we've said enough nice things about Geneva. So let me at least ask Matt.
Let me
ask Matt Horn and Katie Flowers then. What would you identify as the biggest outstanding problem or issue? And this isn't like asking a politician, what's your biggest flaw? And the politician says, I'm too honest. You know, right. I'm too good looking.
I wish our trees were a little greener.
Yeah, right. Communities are amorphous. They're changing. I mean, you could pick one day and stop and evaluate, but Geneva's not going to be the same in a month, in a year, in 10 years. And so what do you see as the biggest challenge in your mind?
So two. One is we've got a really great group, a really great cohort of people who, baby boomers, who are just like everyone else, who are on the verge of retirement, if they haven't already retired. Geneva, Sage talked about diversity of housing stock as a challenge. And if I put five houses on the wall in here and ask you to pick the Geneva house, you'd pick it in a second. You know what it looks like. You drove by 500 of them. They're multi-level. They're stairs. The washer and dryer in the basement and the bedrooms up top. And when you get to 70, 75, 80 years old, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And particularly if your kids aren't in the region anymore and you're looking for something to simplify. And so what we really have to tackle, if we're going to keep these folks, maintain that segment of our population, which right now is our most affluent segment, the folks with the most disposable income, the most ready to reinvest in their community, we're going to lose those folks to places west of us who've got diversity in housing stock, who might have some no maintenance.
Like who? Where might they go?
So certainly Canandaigua has made investments in that area, eastern Monroe County even into Fairport, where they could go and be on a single level with no maintenance and they still got their Wegmans up the street and they don't have to worry about it. So I think that's part one. And part two is, you know, we've addressed the school challenges on the macro level to say we've gone from 60 to 85%, and it's a tremendous number, and we're happy about it, and we're celebrating it, but we do have to drill down, and we do have to address some subsets of that information and figure out how we get economically disadvantaged kids across the stage in those same numbers and make that 90% number, 85% number representative across the board. And those are what I think are the two challenges.
Katie?
Sure. I would just reflect that and also just continue with this shift of, how can we as a community address our challenges? We're very honest about who we are. We are not perfect. We have some things we need to tackle. And so how do we go about doing that? And it's not a blame game. It's not administration and counselor, city councilors, teachers. It's family. It's all of our kids. We are invested in their well-being. And so that has taken on a different look. It might be Cornell Cooperative Extension creating a video to focus on STEM careers so that kids can see the relevance of science, technology, engineering, math, staying and doing well in Geneva. So focusing on the positive as well. So 15 years ago, this was the story. But equally important to that story are the kids that were graduating. I think 80% of the 60% were graduating and going on to 2 and 4 year stories. So that story wasn't told. Now we have that information and we're better at telling it. And so we're grateful for this opportunity to continue with that conversation.
And this is an observation of mine, and maybe this is a Sage Gerling question. You can help me. You can tell me if this is accurate or not, but I feel like when I go to Geneva, look, every community is going to have gas stations and sort of probably some big box stores and some chains, but it feels bifurcated enough, and that there are parts of Geneva that feel really, really, you talk about 60% of storefronts vacant in 2008, only 20% vacant today, but they are not sort of low-hanging fruit, mass chain. There's a lot of character. And it doesn't look like you've made easy decisions or just taken the first person who walked in the door. You've had thoughtful decisions about, does this fit here and does this fit here? Or maybe I'm imagining things. Sage?
Yeah, we have definitely been intentional, but it hasn't just been us. So there's a lot of grassroots efforts going on. You think of the Love Geneva effort that came on, that for a while nobody would admit who was behind it, and that was intentional. And Geneva Night Out, which is the first Friday night of the month downtown, local artists in the storefronts down, in our downtown. And that, I think, is what's been some of the success. So yes, we try to be very intentional about where we're focusing our efforts, because we cannot, unfortunately, be everywhere with an unlimited amount of resources. But at the same parallel time, there's all these different efforts going on in Geneva as
well. Yeah, I'm not going to name names, but there are certain communities I could drive through, and I will say, look, I like tacos, but Taco Bell right here? I mean, right here? I don't understand. How does that fit there? And it just, I don't get that. I don't get that feeling in Geneva. I get the feeling in Geneva that it has been thoughtful, et cetera. You mentioned Friday Night Out is because we talked about it on this program, and we talked about First Fridays, which has become sort of a national thing. Rochester has First Friday. Geneva has Friday Night Out. You get a chance to kind of go out, see a lot of artists' work. It's a really fun atmosphere, so Geneva does that. I missed a little bit of what you were saying, though, about this mystery campaign, Sage. What was that?
So Love Geneva was started by a few Genevans who felt that we really need to emphasize all the pride that was coming out of Geneva.
When was this?
This was 3 years ago-ish.
Yeah. Yep.
And it started kind of as cash mobs downtown. So
flash mobs,
cash mobs.
What?
So come down to FA Church Hardware on this Saturday and spend your money. And
it was a collective
group saying we are making an intentional decision to shop at one store.
Buy local.
Right. Buy local.
Gotcha.
Yes. And so you can get a Love Geneva card to that supports the library, but it also gives you discounts at restaurants or businesses downtown.
So it's still going on.
It's still going on. It's very vibrant. You'll see Love Geneva next time you're down there, and maybe even Rochester, you'll see
bumper
stickers.
I bet you I've
seen
it and just not even really realize,
yes.
You know.
Yes. But it was started by, folks that love and felt like there was a group of people growing that really wanted to show how much they appreciated
who
Geneva.
Did start it. What's the answer to the mystery?
I don't know, for supposed
just local residents.
Well, there was a couple of local residents and really folks who were relatively new to Geneva in the last 10 years, and they saw the potential here and they saw what was happening. And it's neat, we talk about collective impact, and the idea isn't, well, go take $100 more out and spend it at FA Church or Area Records or Super Casuals. The idea was you were going to go to the mall and buy a jacket. don't go to the mall this Saturday. Go to Super Casuals this Saturday and buy your jacket. Or you were going to go to Lowe's anyway and buy a drill. Do it at FA Church this weekend. And just kind of take what you were already going to do and direct it inward. And here are the possibilities. And when we were going out for the All-America City pitch, Kevin Dunn, who is one of the creators of Love Geneva, told a great anecdote. And that is, in the same five-year span that Burger King closed up shop in Geneva and gave up, 40 businesses opened up in downtown, and a chunk of those were restaurants. We talked about it, you know, earlier and before the show about this wild, you know, eat local movement that's happening in Geneva, and residents respect it. Residents and really the region really enjoys being downtown in Geneva, and it's kind of started to feed off of itself, so to speak, and become a real movement.
If you're not in Geneva, you're missing out. I've talked to people who have moved, and they said, what happened? And I always said, everybody rolled up their sleeves, got into the conversation, you should move back.
Yeah. We're talking about the success of the folks who do live there and are proud to live there. The success of Geneva, recently named, about a week or two ago now?
2 weeks, yeah.
2 weeks ago, was named by the National Civic League an All-America City. Now, the National Civic League, is it every year?
Every year.
Every year, names 10 American cities All-America cities, which is why Buffalo, you see that sign going to Buffalo, and Buffalo was named an All-America City years ago. This year, Geneva was the only city in New York State to get that designation, and you've been hearing this hour why that is from some of the folks who made that pitch and who've been making some of these changes happen, from sort of the reinvention and the revitalization of the economy to addressing issues with education, dramatically raising graduation rates, improving education, and then asking where the city goes next. And when it comes to dining, it might be an appropriate place to end because we talked a little bit about dining, but you know, Sage Gerling, you and your husband have a night out. A rare night out.
That's right.
Unencumbered.
Yes. Two young kids.
I know. I've got a 3-year-old, I know, but you've got an unencumbered evening. Where are you going in Geneva?
We like to sample around, but we enjoy Halsey's a lot. I really like Ichiro, too, which is our Japanese kind of restaurant. And we are fans of Red Dove. We really miss Ports outside, but Ports inside is good as well.
Now hold on a second, because my wife and I ate at Ports just about 6 weeks ago.
And you ate outside.
No, ate inside, but are you saying that we're not? You can't eat outside. I thought
no.
For a second you were saying they were closed.
Ports used to have a little burger kind of cafe with the best soft serve ice cream, and you could go down and get a chicken sandwich, and it was delightful. But they moved forward on the other really wonderful food that they have, the indoor environment, and expanded. So
I did see the expansion. Okay, so that's Ports. So you have a lot of different kind of dining options there. And these are all, again, these are not chains. There's nothing against chains, but there's a lot of character in places like that. Katie Flowers, where are you going on a night out?
All of those places that you just mentioned. I love Lorena. It's a Mexican restaurant, which you walk by it, you might not notice it, but I'm telling you now, R-E-Y-N-A, go in, have the best burrito of your life. Matt, where are you going?
I'm a burgers and fries guy, so I'm going to stop at Joe's Hots and have a dog and some hash browns. Then I'm going to go up the street to either Eddie O'Brien's or Microclimate for my after-dinner beverage.
It is a city that has, you know, that has blue-collar workers, industrialists, winemakers, artists, college professors. I mean, it is a remarkably diverse population of people living there, not just working there, but living there. And we haven't talked much about the Finger Lakes wine industry this hour. It's obviously a large asset, but let me start to wrap there. Matt Horn, how much has the wine industry played a role in the success and sort of the rebound of Geneva?
It's huge. It's a big deal for us. And, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we We were really focused on the tourism aspect of it, how to capture these folks who are in the limos coming off the wine trails. And that's really part of what built our downtown is into just an incredible dining experience, as we knew we had folks coming in from all angles looking for someplace great to eat. And it has played out that way. And where we've turned our focus now is to really becoming an industry center for wine and craft beverage. And in the last couple of years, the Finger Lakes Wine Symposium, which is a weekend-long industry event where we bring winemakers in from all over. But even fun events like the Rosé Soirée, which celebrates on Linden Street, which celebrates the rosés of the region. Instead of thinking of Geneva as a place to go after you have your wine, we think of it as integral to the wine industry in the region. And partners like Cornell and the Tech Farm and others have made that happen.
Yeah, Sage, I'm sure you've seen that up close pretty well yourself, haven't you?
I have. It's exciting. And in addition to wine, distillation and ciders are really growing as well. We have Lake Drum Brewery that just opened downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Leyline Distillery also.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And forgive the unprepared host. Isn't there a new tea place not far from you? Isn't there a place that's making tea?
Bubble Tea is on its way.
That's probably not what you're thinking. There is one over in Waterloo.
Over in Waterloo. Really
across the street from the outlets.
Yes.
It has been. I often focus on the wine side, but certainly craft beer. Distillation, as you say, you got tea, you've got a cheese trail now. Mm-hmm. So all these interesting things happening there. And we've got about 40 seconds. So Geneva 2020 or looking forward, what's the future? Matt Horn, wrap it up for us.
Geneva's on the move. We're going to continue to make progress in graduation rate. We're going to get our kids to a two-year or four-year school, whatever they choose. We're going to get them ready for their career. But more than that, as you alluded to, we're going to give them someplace to go when they graduate. When they finish with their four-year degree or their two-year degree or their job training program, we want them circling right back, working in Geneva, either in the wine industry or in any of our other industries, opening a storefront downtown. That's the most heartening thing from my perspective, is to look at the storefronts and see the people who grew up in Geneva, left, came back, and started a business. We want to keep that cycle going.
Congratulations on your success, the designation of an All-America City, and we solved that mystery this hour for anyone who's ever driven past that sign on the way to Buffalo and said, why isn't it All-American City? All-America City is the National Civic League, 10 cities a year. Geneva's one of them. Matt Horn is the Geneva City Manager. Nice talking to you this hour. Congratulations,
Matt. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, Sage Gerling, Geneva Director of Neighborhood Initiatives. Nice to see you, Sage.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Katie Flowers from Hobart and William Smith Colleges, their Director of Community Engagement and Service Learning. Katie, nice having you.
Thrilled to be here.
All right, thanks to our great crew this hour, Val LaBanca, the engineer extraordinaire of this program, Caitlin Madison, our intern, and Ra Ra Riot and Barsook Records for providing the music Ra Ra Riot with ties to Geneva, New York. Did you know that, Matt Horn?
Oh, absolutely.
There you go. Even the music from Geneva this hour. Thanks for listening to member-supported public radio.